Good afternoon, everybody. I think we're going to go ahead and get started. So welcome to the panel, Recasting Race After World War II, Transnational Perspectives. We have three great papers ahead and a wonderful comment, I'm sure, too. I'm Alice Conklin from the Ohio State University, and I will be the chair this afternoon. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first panelist, Miriam Halley-Davis, who is an assistant professor at the University of California at Santa Cruz. She co-edited a volume with Bloomsbury in 2018 entitled North Africa and the Making of Europe. Her recent articles can be found in the Journal of European Integration History and the Journal of Contemporary History, and you will hear in a moment about her current monograph. So, Miriam, I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks to all of you for being here. So what I'm going to talk about today is the revisions from my dissertation, which was really on the Constantine Plan. And the book is going a bit of a different direction, so it's great to have this moment to think through that with all of you. When Albert Hirschman wrote his classic, The Passions and the Interests, he argued that the diffusion of capitalist forms owed much to a, quote, desperate search of avoiding society's ruin, permanently threatening at the time because of the precarious arrangements for internal and external ruin. While Hirschman's original concerns are quite far from my research interests, I'd like to argue that during the Algerian War of Independence, economic planners viewed the market economy as a form of pacification. Modernization programs served colonial economic interests, the economic interests that Hirschman was talking about, while also claiming to calm indigenous passions rooted in Islam. So this is one of the first arguments of my dissertation and now the book. And I won't have time to get into the basis for the argument about Islam being what I call a religious racial nexus around which racial capitalism was able to take root in Algeria. So today I'm going to argue for a concept that I'm kind of awkwardly at the moment calling post-racial capitalism, in the sense that discussions on capitalist development overlooked the historical process of racial capitalism, but language about development helped to disavow the ways in which colonialism was a racial formation. So racial capitalism both as producing a reality on the ground, but also providing a language in which that reality could be recoded through ideas of culture and economic aptitudes. So I also argue that the Fifth Republic introduces a break in terms of older traditions of economic planning, designating a form of racial neoliberalism. The FLN, of course, began a violent war of independence in 1954, and 4 years into that war, in 1958, Charles de Gaulle announced the Constantine Plan. He looked to solve the crisis in Algeria, stating, quote, "An economist will fix this for me." Must be great to have such confidence in economists. And as he was designing this plan, he chose not a colonial official who knew things about the Algerian economy and situation, but instead Paul de Louvrier, who had been working with Jean Monnet on European integration prior to arriving in Algiers. And so I argue that by bringing the technocratic tools of European integration into the arena of decolonization, de Louvrier helped to introduce what I'm calling this break in 1958 of racial neoliberalism. The Constantine Plan itself was an ambitious plan to socially and economically develop Algeria with a series of goals I won't get into here, creating 400,000 new jobs, redistributing land, and also constructing housing. So I won't be addressing the kind of successes and failures of the plan today, but I'd be happy to talk about that later. What interests me is how the Constantine Plan was envisioned along neoliberal lines that simultaneously defined religious racial difference in terms of market capacities rather than civilizational differences. So the older vocabulary of racial difference in Algeria had been one of civilizational difference constructed around Islam. And here you start to see notions of market capacities and aptitude. So it's a bit of a different language for thinking about racial difference. And I argue that the Constantine Plan was a clear departure from previous attempts at colonial development and an example of what Foucault has called governing for the market. So there's the title of my paper. I realize that using the terminology of neoliberalism requires a good number of caveats and explanations, especially given the flurry of discussions around the term itself. Many scholars posit neoliberalism as something that emerges in the 1970s or 1980s, David Harvey's arguments, for example. But a recent trend of scholarship by intellectual historians has looked to the interwar and postwar period for the origins of neoliberalism, seeing it more as a thought collective than a specific doctrine. Much of this scholarship focuses on the Walter Lippmann Conference, which was held in Paris in 1938, and the Mont Pèlerin Society, which was formed in 1947. Despite the significant differences in the ideas that the members held, one can identify a certain key element, such as the fundamental belief in the superiority of the market economy over state intervention. One could also note a commitment and call for state intervention in order to ensure market relations so that the state has to step in so that the market can operate correctly. And also the priority of the price mechanism as well as free enterprise, right? The competition becomes the kind of key word for these planners. And so while many see this as a European-wide phenomenon, it's also possible to identify a specifically French strand of this movement. The economic historian Richard Cusel speaks of a, quote, Gallic style of state management of economic, of the economy that blends state direction, corporatist bodies, and market forces. And certainly this approach to economic planning was developed not only by economists, but also by social Catholic thinkers in France who are committed to finding a middle way between socialism and capitalism. One well-known social Catholic group, Économie Humanisme, uses the word neoliberal in their 1952 manifesto. Echoing Foucault's observations, they use the term to designate a policy in which, quote, the public sector receives indications coming from the private sector, and the private sector remains under the rule, or reste soumis, of the market. The Cold War was central for social Catholics as well as liberal economists. The onslaught of communism appeared to both of these groups as a new and dangerous form of passion. So in the Fifth Republic, questions of economic organization and decolonization conjugated these two understandings of the passions together, communist passions on the one hand and Islamic passions on the other. So hopefully this discussion explains a bit of my use of the category neoliberal in the 1950s, which I realize, again, is a bit jarring. But these are the ideas that shaped the Constantine Plan, as well as the racial formation that defined Algeria in the late 1950s and early 1960s. In light of Algeria's inclusion in the European Economic Community, a country that did Brexit much better than Britain is currently trying to do, as a result of this new economic strategy that came out of European integration, the trope of the lazy or fatalistic Arab, or notions that Arabs were somehow inapt at agriculture, were now expressed in terms of market behaviors that could be embraced by a certain Muslim elite. And this, of course, is consistent with the needs of the late colonial state, which by 1960 was looking to Algerian independence and trying to stave off the possibility of an economic rupture with France. The French state was also able to harness an extraordinary amount of resources for the Constantine Plan because of the war raging in Algeria. So the Constantine Plan broke with older models by prioritizing growth, employment, and public support for the private sector. De Louvrier was quite clear that a strong state was needed to properly manage the market and overcome the forces of conservatism in the metropole as well. However, in Algeria, unlike France, he put the question a bit differently. He defended his choice of calling the Constantine Plan a development plan, while when speaking about French plans, he would call them a plan of modernization and equipment. So when journalists asked him about this disparity in the vocabulary, he claimed that in Algeria, traditional agriculture was outside of the monetary circuit, and that for these individuals, i.e. Muslim Algerians, quote, economic calculation was in the modern sense just not possible, unquote. So we're in a territory where one had to create an entirely new sense of initiative because of the Muslim labor force that was not accustomed to selling their labor power, he thought the development was the more appropriate term, unlike in France. The direction of the plan explained that, quote, the essential goal of the plan is to allow the population to live and employ its capacity for work more efficiently. So in the domain of schooling, for example, the goal was not, as you might think, just to increase the number of children that went to school. That would seem to be in accordance with a development plan. Instead, the goal was to provide a young generation with the kind of training that would enable them to fulfill their economic and civic responsibilities. So the vocabulary about why these children need education is a bit different. Similarly, the state did not seek merely to increase agricultural production, but to encourage farmers to develop their own initiatives in order to improve their standard of living. This vision of progress reflected the technocratic belief in the so-called multiplier effects, which is also a term that appears in the plan quite often. These key variables depended not on specific industries or geographical regions, but the ability of Muslims to internalize the economic values of competition, profit, and responsibility. This new neoliberal mode of economic and social planning was against any initiative that resembled charity or protectionism. Instead, it upheld the introduction of market forces that would act as a lever or shock, and again, these are terms that come out of the planner's vocabulary, among the native population. There was also no consensus among planners that development should seek to concretely improve the standard of living for the native population. At one meeting led by the Secretary General of the administration in 1960, there were two opposing understandings of what the Constantine Plan was trying to do. According to one conception, which I would call kind of a functionalist conception, the goals outlined by de Gaulle during his speech were a declared benchmark that France was responsible for achieving. So the plan did have goals that were to be fulfilled. But there was a second, and I would say more widespread notion of the plan, that it was in fact an integral part of France's political policy to ensure coexistence in the case of autodetermination. And especially damning to that first kind of more practical view, those who held this more symbolic conception actually argued that the plan had no scientific value and that attempts to have an actual benchmark to be reached were irrational. So the performance of the plan to many were more important than the concrete objectives that were to be met. So consistent with neoliberal doctrine, the plan was not designed to achieve benchmarks but to incentivize certain forms of behavior. The plan was conceived as a tool of public relations, which is the term that planners use once they decide that psychological warfare had a bad ring to it. There was a series of slides, there was a series of traveling fairs to help French and Algerian publics see the benefit of the plan. Rather than a list of economic goals, innovators such as de Louvrier called for the Constantine Plan to have a brand that would be easily recognized. They repeated that the plan should be shrouded in a certain mystique rather than, again, having a benchmark of performance. This also meant recasting Muslim natives as consumers of information. Those working on publicizing the plan wondered how they could harness the power of that typically oriental way of spreading information, which is, of course, the rumor, le téléphone arabe. The Psychological Bureau wrote that potential rumors should be well-chosen, efficient, and most of all, controllable. This sensitivity even extended to what color should be used on the posters. Planners decided that the color green should only be used in benevolent allusions to Islamic beliefs or the diffusion of texts emanating from religious personalities. Similarly, they used the form of the Arabic fable, modeled on the well-known Joha stories, to transmit messages to Algerian Muslims about the economy. Yet teaching the Muslim population about an economic plan presented challenges since, planners noted, Muslim Algerians, quote, were not economists, unquote. According to the general delegation of the government in Algeria, this meant that images rather than numbers should be used in publicity campaigns. The 5th Bureau of the French Army, infamously known for psychological warfare, presented proposals for the slogans to be associated with the plan, such as lazy people, les paresseux, refuse the Constantine Plan. The propaganda campaign fits well with the conviction of the director of the plan that the, quote, final objective is to put the rural populations to work for their own benefit and not to be on the state's payroll. According to one top official, the ultimate goal was to transform Homo Islamicus into Homo Economicus. Those are his terms. Yet some experts worried that the Constantine Plan failed to take into account the different sensibilities of the Algerians. One memo asked, will they feel comfortable in a conference room of the town hall designed by a Parisian architect? Wouldn't they prefer to debate the problems in their own way, that of their ancestors, in the room of a jama'ah or sitting under sacred rocks under an olive tree. At other times, it seemed that ignoring cultural difference would be more prudent. For example, one of the slogans proposed by the Constantine Plan, which echoed Louis Pasteur, was, quote, "I ask you neither your race nor your religion. I ask you what causes your suffering." So while the first approach transposes the colonial doctrine of association onto development, which is a very well-known story, the second adopts the colorblind posture associated with assimilation in many ways. But both versions of development assume that Islam had to be accounted for in any economic program, whether that was directly through incorporating motifs and sensibilities or indirectly by recoding racial difference in the form of economic capacities. One of the key features of contemporary racial neoliberalism, as theorized by David Goldberg, is the tendency to see the market as a tool of social transformation while also erasing the structural violence of racism in the past. Here, the Constantine Plan quite clearly served to counter the FLN's accusations that the war was a response to a fundamentally racist colonial system. Any link between economic facts and colonial actions was carefully elided by the categories used by planners themselves. For example, one of the official talking points of the Constantine Plan insisted that Algeria's plight was not France's fault, but the result of the global economic crisis of 1930, the Second World War, and the alarming demographic rise of the Algerian population. The crude notion of the plan being in direct competition with FLN for the hearts and minds of Algerians was conveyed by Jean Morin, who took the reins of the plan over from de Louvrier in 1960, who stated that, quote, unfortunately, terrorists could destroy Algeria faster than planners could build it. The post-war social sciences, particularly the disciplines of behavioral psychology and statistics, seduced economic planners who sought a more complete understanding of the social world. This also, however, allowed developmental planning to be presented as a colorblind endeavor. When the director of the National Institute for Statistics was discussing the thorny issue of the census in Algeria, he came across the issue of race and religion. Algerian Muslims had been granted citizenship in 1958, but this does not solve the issue. In reflecting on the census, he wrote, quote, "All Algerians being French citizens, it seemed preferable to eliminate any differentiation between those of French or Muslim origin. Yet it is blaringly obvious," he stated in Sotto's yeux, "that the statistical difference among these elements is of a primordial interest." Time and time again, questions of providing statistics face the question of how to represent Algeria as part of France and not as a colonial possession, while also downplaying the reality of a racial formation that had made poverty synonymous with the Muslim population. A similar act of elision in regards to the history of racial formation occurred within the language of planning itself. Planners strongly denied any notion that Algeria was a barter economy, which would imply that a foreign minority controlled trade to import manufactured goods while exporting raw materials. Planners preferred the language of a dualist economy, which was defined as, quote, "an economy where two economic systems at different technical stages live side by side," unquote. So there again, eliding the fact that underdevelopment had been a systematic form in the introduction of capitalism. Once again, the General Commission of the Plan was adamant, quote, "that the modern economy in Algeria is not parasitical to the traditional sector, but exists in parallel." So rather than comparisons with Martinique, which was a classic case of colonial underdevelopment, French propaganda drew a parallel between the Constantine Plan and southern regions of Italy, for example. Again, any notion that class divisions mapped onto ethnic divisions were rejected by the planners. So in conclusion, while there are important differences between the Constantine Plan and the racial neoliberalism of the late 20th and early 21st centuries, I would argue that the articulation of religion, race, and the economy is fundamental for thinking about how Islam operated as a religious racial nexus. And it also ties in to contemporary debates on Islamo-gauchisme in France, for example, the notion that any attempt to think about religion always has to be second order to capitalism, rather than acknowledging that religious categories were actually the ways in which capitalism was introduced in Algeria and structured access to land, property, and livelihood. So thank you.